Understanding your loved one's needs. The challenge of grief during the holiday season. Today in the Upper Cumberland. The holiday season is fast approaching. For most of us, that means holiday fun, annual celebrations, a chance to gather with families. For some residents, however, it is a painful reminder of who is not there. Today, we go inside the issue of grief, particularly during the holiday season. Dr. Catherine Wood is a psychologist at Tennessee Tech who has made the study of how we deal with grief.
Dr. Catherine Wood, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
How did you become interested in the issue of grief?
Well, a lot of times you will find that grief researchers actually have a personal kind of story and view on it. And so my dad died when I was 8 years old, and that has really sent me on a trajectory of kind of trying to figure out different things about not only myself, but about how it affects children and adolescents. And then the adults in their lives and how they can kind of be there for those kids. And so that was really the precipice for kind of my interest in grief. And then it just has kind of catapulted from there.
It's such an interesting topic because you say, how do people grieve?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, how many different people are there in the world, right? I mean, we all grieve differently.
Right. And what I say is that it's a universal but individualized experience. Right. So everyone will grieve at some point in their lives. But it is a very individualistic way that we grieve. And it is not a one size fits all. And it's different for every person. So that's really the biggest thing about it that we, you know, need to really kind of come into the room with is understanding that the way you grieve may be different from the way I grieve. And that while we may be experiencing grief, right, collectively, individually, there can be very different ways that we kind of manifest that or you know, show that.
And even the way one person grieves may be different for different people in their lives,
totally.
Different situations
yes.
in their lives.
Yeah, so it really matters of what the relationship was like, what the bond was, what the attachment was, right? Like how close were you to that person, how long that person was in your life, what they meant to you, right? So those can all be kind of variants of how we grieve and why we grieve the way we do and how it looks different for each death.
Does that make grief challenging for people to understand about other people? In other
yes.
words, that all right, it's time, you know, snap out of this.
Totally.
Come on.
Totally. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, grief is more nuanced than we kind of want it to be, right? We want kind of a clear path for not only ourselves, but for others of like, okay, this is the steps, right? This is this black and white process that, okay, I've kind of checked that box, right? It's really hard for us to stay in this space of the unknown or this space where we don't always know what's coming around the corner, right? It can be a really big roller coaster. I think, you know, we a lot of times kind of go back to Kubler-Ross, which was one of the biggest grief researchers, and she has this five stages model. And what a lot of people don't realize about those five stages is that the original intent was for people who were experiencing their own death process. And so we think about, right, oh, you're going to go through denial, and then you're going to go through anger, and then you're going to go through depression, and it doesn't work like that, right? It's not this linear process. And so we've kind of taken certain, you know, kind of the grief research that we do know, right? It's just that everybody kind of knows and applied it in ways that it wasn't ever really originally intended to be applied. And so, again, I think we kind of going back, we want that process. We want, you know, and so it's kind of hard to be like, oh, it's going to feel this way one day or this moment and feel, you know, this way a different moment. And that's just hard. And it looks different, right, for every person. And so then it's just, it's not easy to kind of pin down or feel like you can kind of get a handle on.
So then is there an answer to this question, which is there a healthy way to grieve?
So I would say that there are ways that we cope with grief that are healthier than others. There is not kind of one way to grieve, but there are definitely healthier coping skills and hoping, you know, ways to adapt to grief than others for sure.
Are there signs that grief is, let me just say, off the rails, that it's unhealthy, that you're not getting past
yes.
the issue?
Yeah, and that also can kind of be hard, right? Because we don't want to put a specific timeline on it, because grief really is a continual adaptive process. It's a lifelong process, which also is kind of hard for people to realize. But you're going to grieve differently at 8 years old versus 15 years old versus 20 years old, right? There's going to be things that happen in your life that that grief is going to come back up. And so one of the biggest things really to think about is, you know, how am I engaging in the world? How am I kind of developing relationships, maintaining relationships? And what does that look like, right? Am I just kind of holding myself off and not really engaging or interacting? Or am I kind of pushing through that? Do I have some close people to me that I still feel like I can really, you know, push forward and do those things, or do I not, right? So when we get concerned about kind of grief and a person's grief process, it's really when they are maintaining that isolation for long periods of time. And so we usually see, like with kids, for example, grief may not even hit them until 8 to 10 months after the death, because it takes your brain a lot of time to understand the permanency of that loss. And so as adults, right, like while we may cognitively understand what has happened, our brains are still literally rewiring themselves because they're used to the expectation of, oh, this person always comes home for work at 6 o'clock, and that's right. And then the person doesn't. And so your brain has to adjust. Right. And so a lot of it, too, is our brain literally has to change because they're so used. Our brain is, you know, so used to having this prediction, right, this predictive behavior of this person's going to walk through the door, this person picks up dinner, this person does our taxes, or this, right, like whatever your loved one did, right, your brain has to get used to have kind of absorbing that and rewiring itself to understand what life looks like after the loss. So there's a lot of, you know, depth to it and kind of complications that can come with it.
Dr. Catherine Wood is our guest. She is a psychologist and a grief specialist at Tennessee Tech. When we come back, the holidays and grief. Dr. Catherine Wood from Tennessee Tech is our guest. How much are the holidays a fuse, so to speak, for grief?
Yeah, holidays can be really hard. You know, anniversaries of the death, birthdays, holidays, those are kind of the three big times that are really difficult for people. And so going into the holidays, right, it is a time for family. It is a time to feel joy, and you're kind of expected to be really social and do all of these, right, kind of holiday parties and things at your child's school or whatever it may be, right? And so it can be really hard to feel like I have to show up. Right, I should do this, right? The shoulds and the have tos really kind of come into play with grief during the holidays. And it reminds you, right, of kind of these times. And if you're not joyful, then there can be a lot of shame and guilt toward that, right? So there can be just a lot of kind of negotiation with yourself and with others about what this kind of looks like for you.
It seems as though one of the biggest discomforts among others that are trying to walk with that person who is grieving is, how much do we talk about the person? How much do we bring it up? How much, or do we kind of hide it? And it seems as though both of those has its own set of problems.
Yeah, definitely. But I think, you know, one of the things about if a person is grieving the loss of their loved one, no matter how long it has been, right, that person's life really mattered to them. And so, you know, even for me, my dad died 30-something years ago. It's been 32 years now. I still want him to be remembered and matter, right? Like, I still, even with all of this time that's passed, it's really nice, you know, when we have Christmas and it's like, oh, your dad really loved this, or, right, I remember this memory or whatever. And so I think there strikes a balance, right, of you don't want to trigger somebody. And I know that that can be really tough if you are trying to love somebody really well. But also, you know, it is important that the person that has died is not forgotten, and that can be really important to the loved ones around them. And so, it's kind of asking, right? Like, how do you want me to honor you in this time? How do you want me to, kind of talk about this person, or kind of tell me what would be helpful? And so the Dougie Center, which is probably one of my favorite resources. It's a center for children and families. It's a national grief center. It's based out of Oregon. And they actually have a tips for getting through the holidays. And it's some just really 10 tips or 8 tips that are really helpful. And I think it can just help inform us as well. And so, you know, some of those are kind of, you know, taking care of yourself, kind of looking at the should versus shouldn't, planning ahead, right? Celebrate different feelings, and then find ways to remember and honor the person that's died, right? Big or small. So it's just kind of creating that openness where you are creating an environment where it's okay to talk about the person if you want to. It's okay to share the feelings if you want to. It's also okay if you don't want to, right? It's just, again, it's just kind of this space where you are allowing all the feelings that are coming up. And those may be happy, those may be sad, those may be everything in between. So
you said it's okay to be sad. So that means it's okay for a tear or two during the holidays.
It is. It is definitely okay for
a tear. But that's not culturally, we don't think about that, is it?
No, we don't. And there are definitely some emotions that we, I think, are more comfortable with than others, right? We're not as comfortable with the sadness. We're not as comfortable with the anger. You know, we want to be okay, and we want to portray that to our, to others, right? And especially with our kids, we have to really be mindful of allowing our kids to feel all of the emotions that they feel, right? And again, it's just kind of going back to those quote-unquote healthy ways of grieving. What are we doing with those emotions, right? So we're sad, so what do we do with that, right? Or we're angry, what do we do with that emotion? If we go, you know, do something that is unhealthy, right, then that isn't helping us display that emotion in a way that is healing and helpful. And so it just is about kind of, we feel all of these things. That's totally okay to feel those things. Now, what do we do with those?
As you're talking, I'm thinking, you know, that we, at least my mind, when we think about grief, we think sadness. But anger is a real part of grief, isn't it?
It's a huge part of grief. Yeah, it is. It's a huge part, especially, again, going back to the brain. Like, if you're expecting that person to show up at the door, right, there is sadness there, but there's also anger, especially end of year, right? I have to buy all these presents by myself now, or I have to do all of this by myself. I have to go to a party by myself. To show up at my kid's school by myself. My partner can't be with me, or my grandparent, right, that usually, you know, helped me out with this, right? There's anger there, and that's okay, like, because it isn't fair, right? It feels very unfair. And the injustice of the death, especially circumstances surrounding the death, can really kind of either add to that anger or that sadness, you know, whatever kind of comes up. So it is hard. It is.
Dr. Catherine Wood is our guest from Tennessee Tech. We're talking about grief and loss during the holidays. I want to ask Dr. Catherine Wood for some tangible ways to deal with grief and loss, but it strikes me as you speak on the topic that it's kind of like if there's 30 million people, you know, in a particular area, there's 30 million things that you could do, and there's 30 million mistakes that you can make. So with that as the backdrop, are there some general things that are effective when you're dealing with someone who's grieving?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of my favorite things to say or to ask is, tell me a memory, tell me a favorite memory, right, of your loved one. Tell me something that you like to do with your loved one. And that is also, you know, also keep in mind that the relationship may not have been positive. Right. And so if they're, again, adding to the nuance of it, if there wasn't a positive or close relationship. So, you know, kind of tell me when you think about XYZ. Right. What comes up for you. Right. Sharing pictures, memories are really kind of good or important. Asking, you know, what can we kind of do to memory, like have a memory of this person? Do you want to cook their favorite meal? Do you want, right? Can we light a candle? Right. Can we kind of share about that person? One of the main things is just kind of helping with that processing of, let me make sense of this, right? And so kind of allowing that openness in asking some of those questions of kind of tell me about the person, or tell me about kind of things that kind of come up for you when you think about this person, right? It's just kind of creating that openness. And then, you know, especially with parents, with children, just kind of telling them and explaining to them that, you know, it's okay if you see me cry. It's okay if you see me upset. It's okay, right? Like, those are okay things, right? Like, you especially kids will start to feel responsible for their parents' emotions, right? Oh, I don't want to talk about XYZ because it'll make mom sad or whatever it may be. So really having those conversations of it's okay, right? Like it's okay to be this way. It's okay to be sad. You know, sadness isn't a bad thing. Tears aren't a bad thing. You know, I was listening actually to Andrew Garfield, the Hollywood actor, and his mom died. And he said, you know, if I cry, it's just all the love that I didn't get to express to her. And so it's just things kind of thinking about it in those ways, right? Like it's not a bad thing that we have tears. It's just kind of how we describe them, right? And how we kind of come out of that or what we do with it.
Children are an interesting part of this scenario because at least as adults, we understand death. We understand that that's a natural occurrence,
right?
That nobody has beaten that yet, right?
Right.
But for kids, it's very hard for them to have a concept of that, isn't it?
It is. It is. And it's not until around the age of nine or 10 that they really understand the permanency of it. And so kids really around the age of 9 or 10 really don't understand death. They think it's temporary. They think the person's coming back, right? Again, it goes to that brain, right? The brain isn't making sense of it. It's really hard for the brain, especially as it's developing. And so having that in mind, right, that, you know, if you have a young child or a child that is, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, then they may not really get it. They may be like, oh, dad will be home again, or, oh, yeah, I'll see mom at this, right, or I'll see grandma at this. And they don't, right? They don't understand that. And allowing that to be okay, like saying, you know, just kind of reminding them and using very concrete language. And so saying that they died, and I know that that can be really hard for us as adults instead of pass away, right? Or they went to sleep and never woke up. Well, then the kid can then worry, oh, what if I go to sleep and never wake up, right? So that concrete language is really important. And the other thing with kids is that they'll come in and out of it very quickly. And so play is a really important aspect for it, right? So they'll go play on the playground, and then they'll come back and say something random to you about the person, and then they'll go right back to playing. But that's how they are processing it, right? They kind of process it as it comes up. For our older kids, right, they kind of start to understand the permanency of it and understand what does this mean, right? Why did this happen, right? They'll have kind of more of those existential or abstract questions for us. And so those conversations will be deeper in feeling and meaning. But yeah, for our younger kiddos, it can be really hard. And it can be hard for us as adults, right, to be like, gosh, they were crying 2 seconds ago and now they're playing with their friend. Like, what just happened, right? But that's normal for children.
Dr. Catherine Wood from Tennessee Tech is our guest as we focus on grief. I hope that this question won't be prying in any way, but Dr. Catherine Wood is our guest from Tennessee Tech. Are there things that you look back on from your own experience of losing your father at such a young age that you maybe cringe about, or that, you know, people said to you or made you think in a way that maybe led you down this road to think, you know, I gotta show people that's not the way to handle this? Or
yeah. Definitely. Well, there's definitely the pressure to kind of be over it, right? So I definitely remember one kid in the third grade, my dad died. And, you know, she was a very unkind child, but she said, I know you're glad that your dad died, so you got attention. And I'm like, I would trade any amount of anything to have my dad back, right? And you know,
classic example of kids just say
just
things without thinking,
things,
right?
Gosh, not even thinking about the weight of it, right? And then I had a friend in college, and he's like, aren't you over it by now? And I'm like, it's not about being over it, right? Like, it's about adjusting to it. Like, being in college and not having my dad is very different, right, from being an 8-year-old and not having my dad. And so, again, it's not being over it as much as it's just like, you know, there are times of the year that are harder for me, and I know that, and I plan for that, and I prep for that, and there are kind of rituals that I've established for myself, especially for his anniversary of his death, that if it comes up, then it comes up, right? But for me, it's really like fueling it into something greater and a greater purpose for it. And so for me, it's, you know, trying to kind of wrap my head around it, but also help others just with the sensitivity of it and with the acknowledgement that it matters. And that grief is something, again, that we'll all go through, and we really just need to be more cognizant of kind of how we're addressing it and approaching it with others.
We're talking a little bit about holiday grief as we continue our conversation with Dr. Wood. And so let me give you a specific circumstance, and this is probably a circumstance that affects the most people, and that is your elderly parent has lost their spouse. You've lost your mother or father. They've lost their spouse. And here you are at the holidays, and, you know, the family is back together. And is communication before you get back together, is that one of the things that you would suggest of, you know, how does mom want this holiday to be? How does dad want Thanksgiving or Christmas to go?
Yeah, I think those are really good conversations, that prep, right? And also knowing that it may change, right, in the moment, that flexibility within that, right? So you may have a conversation with one of your elderly parents about kind of what do you want this to look like? How can I be, you know, the most help to you? Or, you know, I know dad used to cook the turkey, and so, you know, is it okay if my husband does that this year, right? Kind of asking that permission, kind of planning for those things. But also knowing that in those moments, there may be things that your parent changes their mind about, or that they kind of want to pivot or shift, or they may need time alone, or may want to go on a walk, or, right, kind of some other things that, and it may be hard for them to accept that help, hard for them to adjust to that help, especially if, you know, their partner was their partner for, you know, 40, 50 years. I mean, those relationships, again, those are lifelong partners, right? That can be a really difficult thing. And so, making it as quote unquote normal as possible, and not, you know, kind of tiptoeing around it, but also just being mindful and respectful of, okay, mom, like we can pivot, right? Like we can do this instead, or if you're kind of done, like that's fine, that we can kind of be done, right? Or if you want us to stay longer, we can stay longer, right? Kind of have that flexibility built in. But yes, that communication is huge.
I guess the other thing is that we've all seen this of the child that becomes, they kind of want to take the role of parent and, you know, make decisions about, well, you know, while we're here, why don't we clean out dad's closet? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, why don't we take down these pictures or those sorts of things? And that would seem to be those things that maybe you do out of an interest of trying to help, but maybe you even do more harm.
Yes, I would agree with that. And I think it's partly what can we do that's with in our control? And sometimes we want to just do those things, right? Like, oh, this is how I can help, right? I have control over cleaning out a closet. I'm really good at that. I can do that. But really taking the lead of the person, right, of the spouse that is closest, right? Knowing that if she wants to keep that closet like that for the next 2 years, that is her choice. That is her process. Again, going back to the brain, right? It's going to take her a long time to realize, even if logically she knows he is gone, emotionally it's going to take a while. And so really taking her lead on that and saying, you know, this is something I would love to help you with whenever you are ready, and not kind of forcing the issue, I think is really important.
That goes back, though, to the time thing, isn't it?
It does.
It goes back to we all want to define the time.
We do.
When for every single person in your life, it may be different.
It is. It is. And it's a process. It's an emotional process too, right? And so we just, again, being mindful of that time and of that kind of process that the person is going through. There isn't a timeline on grief, and we want there to be one, right? We want it to be this process where we can say, okay, in 6 months it'll be like this, and we just can't, right? And so I think that's why grief is so hard. Grief can be really difficult because it is such this open-ended, what does this look like for me on a day-to-day basis, month-to-month basis, year-to-year basis? And it can be really hard, especially with milestones, right? So milestones in life can be difficult, getting married, having children, right? Things like that. It can come all back up again, and you're like, gosh, I thought I kind of dealt with this already, right? So just being aware that it's that lifelong process, even though I know that's hard to hear, and, you know, that we take it a step at a time, a day at a time.
Staying with that example of, you know, going for holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, you're helping your mother or father who's lost their spouse, you've lost your mother and father, and there's that walking on eggshells that we've seen countless times in Hollywood movies and television yeah. shows where, you know, one member of the family wants to talk about that person and everybody else is hesitant.
Yes.
Do you do just what feels comfortable to you?
Yeah, I think within within kind of reason, right? So there may be people that are, I really want to talk about this. I really want to share with this. Well, or is there another person that's okay with that or comfortable with that, that y'all can really have a one-on-one conversation instead of bringing it to the entire family where you know these three or four are just not even ready to talk about it or deal with it, right? And again, that's okay. And so I think it's really, how can we best honor our process while also trying to love the others in our life well, right? And so there may be different reactions and being aware of that, right? So our feelings don't kind of become the most important thing, but it is also like, okay, I'm feeling this way. I really want to talk about him. Is there another person in my family that I feel like I can share this with, that's a safe space to share this with? I'm in this big group setting where we can go on a walk and talk about the person. So I kind of get my needs met, but I'm also not, you know, upsetting the apple cart and really kind of disrupting other people's process. And so I think that that can be something, you know, that we can do.
One final question about this situation that we're talking about, because again, I think it's, you know, it's the most common situation that we all deal with grief. And that is your children, mm-hmm. you know, and what should you communicate to them about the fact that, okay, we're going to grandma's house and, you know, grandma may be sad. I mean, is it okay to have that discussion with an 8, 9, and 10-year-old?
It is.
Don't let it throw you? Or
Yeah, it is. And I think, again, it goes to, you know, all the emotions that we feel are okay. And so today you may see grandma, you know, be a little sad. Or today you may see grandma not be very sad. Or you may see her be more quiet, right? It depends, right? And that's okay. And so what we want to do is we want to make sure that we are just loving your grandma and being, you know, the sweet little boy or sweet little girl that you are, and just making sure that, you know, we make this day as, you know, as normal and good as it can be. So it's just kind of having those conversations. I think preparation for kids is really important, and for ourselves too. I think it helps us process it a little bit more too. But also, you know, just kind of letting them know, like, you know, grandma may feel all sorts of different things, and that's all right. You know, we know she lost grandpa, and it's, you know, that's a really hard thing, you know, that since grandpa died. So that's totally okay. And a lot of times too, I will say, you know, grandparents will respond to grandchildren very differently than they respond, right, to their own children, just because it's a different relationship, and the innocence of children just looks a little different too. So just knowing too that there can be a comfort there, I think, by grandma having a grandchild want to be extra, you know, cuddly, or want, you know, to be like, I miss grandpa too, right? That just means differently. It just they hear it differently from a grandchild.
Dr. Catherine Wood from Tennessee Tech is our guest. In our final moments with Tennessee Tech's Dr. Catherine Wood, as we talk about grief, is there a question about grief that you want answered that you can't get answered?
Oh, God. Is there a question about grief that I want answered that I can't get answered?
Is there something about it that just still eats at you?
Not really that I can think of. I mean, I think the biggest thing is I really just want to communicate and really get across that, you know, grief is this, we live in the gray with grief, and it's, that can be hard. And I think I've over the years come to accept the gray. And that takes a lot of work, right, and a lot of years of practice. But I think the importance of acknowledging what grief is something that I just want to continue to talk about, and, you know, help others realize that it's important to talk about it. It's important to talk about our loved ones that are no longer here.
My biggest takeaway from our conversation is we think of grief as more about the heart, but you've opened my eyes that it's as much about the brain.
It is. And I will say that's been kind of more recently I've kind of delved into the brain side of it. And it makes so much sense to me, right? Like when I think about it and think about grief, I'm like, oh, yeah, my brain, you know, it starts to predict things, right? When you get up in the morning, it has this predictive, like, okay, I'm going to get up. I'm going to have my cup of coffee. I'm going to, you know, do all of these things. And so when a significant person is taken out of that equation, your brain's like, but wait a second, right? Like I used to sit down and eat coffee and eat my breakfast with my loved one, and now they're not here anymore, right? Like what does my brain do with that? And so it really is a just trying to kind of marry or be able to to kind of rectify those two things between the head and the heart, right? Trying to really figure out, like, okay, like, my heart feels this, I feel all the sadness, but my head is in a completely different place. And I think that also hopefully allows people to hear that there is really some grace and space with that, right? That our brain really is literally rewiring. And so that helps us to say, like, oh, okay, I can have some more grace for myself in this process. Because my brain, you know, is doing the best it can, right? So.
And it's an organ. And
it is, yeah.
It's going to do it on its own sweet time.
It is.
Dr. Catherine Wood from Tennessee Tech, thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was